It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, there we go. Alright, hello everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world sponsored by USA Channel's new upcoming sitcom. She is a cannibal. He is a World War II Nazi fighter pilot. But due to a typo from an eccentric billionaire's will, they're stuck managing a frozen yogurt stand together. Can she control her urges for human flesh long enough for him to get deported by the Shoah Foundation? Find out this fall on USA when Donner and Blitzen premieres Thursdays.
You know, negotiations for that deal took a long time, but I'm really glad we did that.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 155.
I don't hear them laughing. Do you think it bombed?
What?
Well, I've been at home a lot and taking a lot of drugs.
I guess we'll,
so
we'll see if the pilot works in that.
I put a lot of detail into that. I don't, again, I've been on a lot of drugs, but something got me thinking about the reindeer names, and I thought Donner and Blitzen, and I'm like, so, like the Donner Party, and then, like, yeah, I was like, this is hilarious.
I get it.
And then I just built it out from there, but like over days have I been building that. I'm really not sure it's worth it.
I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was pretty good.
A lot of drugs. So, anyway, I said I'm Tony. You said you're William. You did not say what episode this
I
was.
I did, too. I said it was episode 155.
Where was I?
High?
Yeah. They got me down from what I was on. I'm not on Percocet now. I'm on Lortab, which is, like, the same stuff, but just lower dose. So it's like methadone of Percocet. It's literally the same drugs, just the dosage is different. And I don't know, the timing is weird, because not only is it theoretically lower, but I only get to take it, like, one every 6 hours, whereas before it was 1 to 2 every 4 hours. So, and it definitely is different. Like, I feel different, but it's, I don't know, it's weird.
Are you feeling okay, though? I mean...
Yeah, I've been back to work this week.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I guess I wasn't sure.
Yeah, no, I went back to work this week, half days, and on Monday, I went from 8 to noon, almost killed me. I was just so exhausted. I came home, I basically slept through the afternoon, and had some pain and stuff, and I was kind of worried I was going to be in trouble for Tuesday. I went to bed extra early and everything, and I was a little worried Tuesday would be bad, but Tuesday I woke up, I was feeling fine.
Good.
So I went back, and that was pretty tiring. And then today... Went back again. Every day's a little bit better, so.
Good. Good to hear.
So how is your week?
Well, not as good as yours. I didn't make up a really fancy sitcom
Donner
or anything.
Don't cheat me, people. I got copyright pending.
I don't think we've consumed any interesting media. You know, we're watching a lot of documentaries lately. I don't think I've talked on
Those
here.
Those aren't interesting.
Not to other people. I don't think
I've talked about documentaries here.
Well, I know, but I mean, I don't think it would surprise anyone that I like documentaries, that I grew up watching them and liked them every bit as much and sometimes more so than whatever the popular films were at the time.
I feel like documentaries are really growing and improving. I mean, some of it I know is me being more mature, but I see some documentaries now that I'm just floored, and I'm like, I don't think anything like this existed when I was younger.
Well, I don't know. I mean, as I watched more documentaries than any other type of film when I was growing up and really liked them. You know what? I think I would even have said back then that I preferred them over... You know, I liked some films, but for the most part, if someone were to ask me, I would say, yeah, I'd sooner watch a documentary than anything else.
Yeah.
We watched Nova a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, we watched Cosmos when it was first
Are you going to watch the new set?
I'm interested in watching it, but I'm afraid I'm not going to remember, you know, to, like, watch it. Because I'm not going to watch it while it airs.
Yeah.
I'll have to watch it online or something.
We were thinking about DVRing it, and we've sort of decided not to, because odds are it's going to be something we want to watch, and we're going to save to watch, and say we were going to watch, and then not watch. It's one of those things that our feeling that we should watch it is going to outweigh our actual desire to watch it at a given moment, so we're just not going to bother. And we'll be able to grab it some way if it becomes that amazing.
I mean, you know, I've often talked about how I enjoy, in books, I enjoy nonfiction.
Yeah, I a lot was more than just fiction. Thinking that when you were saying that.
But I watch a lot of film and a lot of television, and I like television, but I don't think I've ever said, although, again, I'm sure it's not surprising that I like documentaries a lot, and for a long time, I didn't watch very many of them, I suppose because of the kids, you know, I didn't expect that they would enjoy them very much or understand them very well. Certain ones, I thought they would like, but a lot of the other ones that I was interested in, I didn't think they'd like. But now that, you know, they're older, or two of them are gone, and the other kid is 18, she likes to watch them sometimes too, so we've been mostly doing that. It's historical stuff mostly. Which is really interesting because, you know, a lot of perspectives on certain historical events and things have changed quite a bit.
Oh, yes.
From when you and I were in elementary school and high school, so that there's better information. So, you know, there are revelations in some of those documentaries that are totally new to me.
Yeah. I just think that people don't consider the advent and the changes and the different movements and periods in filmmaking. I think people frequently don't realize that same stuff applies to documentaries. I mean,
no, that's true.
The postmodern era changed documentaries completely. Mm-hmm. And just lots of filming techniques. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and you know, Michael Moore swept the world with his style of documentary. Mm-hmm. And then at a certain point, some people found major fault with that, went in a different direction, and
well, and Ken Burns really did something pretty innovative when he did Civil War. I mean, it wasn't hugely different than stuff that came before, but it was he really had a way of bringing people, almost transporting people back. A lot of documentaries before then consisted mostly of academics doing the same thing they do in their lecture halls. You know, they'd just be telling you what it was and in a certain order. And you might show paintings or pictures or something, and it very much felt like just a multimedia kind of lecture, which was cool. I mean, I like that, but it didn't. But what Ken Burns brought to it was such a, I don't know, you know, having different actors read different parts if it was going to be from letters and things people wrote, and showing certain pictures and adding sound effects to the pictures and things. Really, he just did a very subtle thing to the documentary, but it really made a huge difference. And You see that influence in a lot of documentaries.
What I
today.
Love is the, and I still think this is fairly sort of burgeoning in its way, but the understanding that a documentary is in no way objective.
Oh, yeah.
And I really like people that are owning that. And that's why I talk about Michael Moore, and to be honest, my experience with Michael Moore films is limited. But in my mind, well, and I had this, as much as I enjoyed Super Size Me, I feel that's a really good example, too. Super Size Me is, like, showing you the true story behind what's going on. They're not. They're showing you a lot of shit you haven't seen before, but they have an agenda, and they are manipulating things to match it.
Sure.
And this day and age where people are making documentaries, owning the fact that this is, or even addressing, like, frequently now they address it within the film that, you know, we're subjective here.
Well,
we can't tell you the truth.
That's right. The thing is, there was a long time in media, in the press, where you just didn't have this notion of we're going to be objective. We're gonna show both sides of the story. I mean, this standard of so-called objectivity in media is fairly recent, and I do think even more recently, people are starting to realize it's kind of bogus. I mean, it's really, you can't really. So the best you can do is present your story. You know, don't make any apologies for however colored it might be, and just trust the person. Like,
we don't use the word color anymore.
That's not what I mean. You know what I mean. But back in in the day when people were, you know, publishing newspapers, they expected the reader to take responsibility for whether or not. Yeah. And it's kind of gotten back to that where, well, you know, we need to trust the consumer to decide, okay, if I'm going to get both sides of this story, I'm going to get online and look for the other side of it or whatever. And a lot of times they're seeing the news online anyway, so it's a really easy thing just to click over to this other site and see what they have.
I think with the global community now and also with the advent of 24-hour news network, it puts a whole new spin that complicates issues.
Sure.
But that's a whole
other
topic.
I have noticed, though, that older people, like people in my father's generation, have not adjusted with this new kind of reality in news. So they see something on a news program, and they think it's like the old Walter Cronkite days where they're telling as close to the truth or some verifiable aspect of the truth, even though they're totally making it up.
And so
they'll, you know, my father will come to me and say, well, this happened. And I'll say, well, where did you hear that? Oh, this news source. I said, Dad, they kind of made that up. And it's like inconceivable to him that they would do that. Right?
Yeah.
And so I have to go someplace and show him, well, no, this is what really happened and these sources. But it doesn't click. It's like, if they're saying it on the news, it must be so.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely.
Now that somehow doesn't work for some other news source that contradicts this other news source.
Oh, no, that's I've loved that where I have debates with somebody. And they say, consider your source. And I'm like, okay, well, what was your source?
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of times they're just like, it's just common knowledge. No. I will say this, though. Yeah. As much as I try and maintain an open mind about these things and never take any of it at face value now, I try and do that in general, but especially with news. I'm like, I don't know whether I agree or disagree with that. I don't know that it's true. Yeah. I need more. I live and die by Snopes. If somebody at Snopes wanted to make me believe complete bullshit, they would have no problem. Seriously, live and die by Snopes.com to the degree that when people send me stuff, I immediately fact check it at Snopes, and I'm an asshole. I will send it back to them if it's not true.
Well, I mean, I do that too.
And I for some reason, that's where I've drawn the line. I'm perfectly aware that Snopes is run by human beings who could just fuck me over if they wanted to.
Or just be wrong. Any number of things.
But I mean, even intentionally, like I just buy that. I've just decided that my fate, as far as news is concerned, is Snopes.
Well, my approach to it, and I've kind of had this opinion about online media since the 90s. I actually wrote a paper about this very thing, where I actually looked forward to a day when people didn't just trust everything that they saw online, you know, because not just text stuff, but even video stuff, because it could be easily faked. And as we see, that's happened. You know, you get little videos all the time that are fake. But,
well, and Mythbusters is dedicated many episodes to those.
But I thought that would be a good thing when that happened, because when it comes right down to it, if you see some news or something that's claimed to be news or really happened, does it really matter if it's right or true? I mean, sometimes it matters. Sometimes if this is true, I'm going to respond this way. So I need to know if it's true. But most of the time, like,
it becomes very insidious, though. It starts to color your view of whatever the topic is. So frequently, if it's political or whatever,
I suppose, but
you're not going to act based on that, but you're going to now think of the subject of that story in a particular light.
Okay,
and
that's true.
There's going to probably be voting issues.
But that's what I mean. If you think there's going to be some practical impact on you personally, or that you're going to have to do something, or you're going to do something a particular way, then you really need to research that out.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of it that it's not going to have any practical impact.
No, whether or not that guy saved those two cats in the flood.
Right. Well, and so what I thought would happen is people would put a lot more, you know, everyone at that time, back in the 90s, was talking about how, oh, this is going to replace everything. You know, people won't leave their houses because they won't have to. And my observation was that the more sophisticated people get with digital media, which, because it's digital, I mean, think about it this way. One thing that digital media has that analog media doesn't have as easily or as well is digital media can more easily be faked.
Yeah.
And so what I argued was that what's going to happen is people are going to get more sophisticated with understanding that everything they get that's digital, and by then everything they get will be digital, could be faked. And therefore, it's actually going to make their personal real life associations that they can easily verify more valuable to them and not less.
Wow, you are way off the mark.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, no. People, now what has happened is people pick their particular news channel, their particular website, and they just believe everything there. Even as I'm saying here, no, Snopes.
That's,
same thing.
That's true.
I don't research. I just go to Snopes.
That's true, but that doesn't contradict what I just said. What my observation is that people, and it was even happening back then. People would meet online, they'd get to know each other online, but they always wanted to meet in person. Even though they knew that they would not be nearly as eloquent, clever, or be able to keep up this facade that they could in the virtual world, they still wanted to do it. And I think it's even more true today. People like online stuff. They like all this digital stuff. But at the end of the day, they want to see it. They want to be there themselves.
I will meet you halfway. I will grant you, I believe in this digital age, people overall are aware that a lot of what they see can be fake and could be bullshit. I don't think people go the extra mile to verify, even when it's particularly important.
No, I agree. But I
think they decide who they think is the truth teller, then they stick with it.
I agree with that, but what I'm saying is their interpersonal, their offline relationships haven't really suffered for it. I mean, you know what I'm saying? That we're not moving toward that place that people talked about in the 90s where people won't leave their house or they won't have friends that aren't online or something like that.
I would disagree somewhat to that. I believe you are encountering individuals, and I have had periods of my life where this is true.
Oh, sure, individuals.
Where stuff... But, well, I mean, if you get enough individuals, it's a thing.
I know, but it's not
I'm not saying it's changing the whole of society, but yeah. It has definitely... That's now a demographic. That's now a measurable demographic.
I think it was probably back then, too, honestly. At least I knew lots of people who were like that, but knew that...
Well, but to this, at this point, you get to where you get really involved, deep, theoretically, relationships... over it. I mean, I have a friend just now who started talking to this woman, got heavily involved with her online. Mm-hmm. They live literally on opposite coasts. Mm-hmm. And he basically has been planning to marry her for a while. He went and visited because he finally got enough money together for 3 days. Mm-hmm. I should say this woman is significantly older than him and has 2 children from a previous marriage.
Okay.
And he was there for about 3 days and then comes back. That is the entire time they've seen each other. Mm-hmm. Ever. And the plan now is to move in together in about a year and get engaged shortly after that.
Sure. I mean, things like this have been happening for decades now.
Well, but more so, it's easier now, and it's much more common now.
I suppose it is. With Skype especially, it's a lot. I mean, that's something that we didn't have 20 years ago. But, you're right.
Live chat was much less common.
Sure. And you're right. A certain demographic has formed... And a certain subculture, I would even say. But nothing like what people were predicting.
No,
I mean, nothing
Well, nothing
close
ever moves as fast as people think it would.
Well, I just don't think that's ever going to happen.
Even if... Well, no, and that's why you always look at sci-fi that is set in the year you are, and it bears no resemblance. I'm reading right now Gibson's Bridge Trilogy, and it's set in the... Basically, it's set right now. And it was written in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And some stuff... is eerily accurate.
Yeah.
Some stuff, I was alive then, and I'm like, oh, no, I see where you got that from. And some stuff, I'm like, no, you made a guess at random. That's not
happening.
Yeah. So it's a weird sort of mix of that stuff.
But what about your week? We're getting
Well, also, we didn't even
track.
Say what this is. People are listening. Oh, they don't even know what this is. They're like, what are the
That's
noises
right. You haven't done your.
Me?
You haven't done your thing.
Anyway, for those of you just joining us, sorry for the first 18 minutes. This is a Magical Talking Hat podcast, as we said. We have a hat. It's magical. It has its own email address. That email address is themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, wonderful people like yourselves, write into that email address with things for us to talk about. Comments, questions, topics, that sort of deal. The hat, all on its own, processes these and transmogrifies them into little note cards with the emails physically written on them that manifest physically with inside the hat. And then we reach into the hat and draw them out at random, read them on the show, and talk about them until we're bored. We do all this for about an hour. As you may have now gleaned, we kill a lot of time in the beginning just talking about whatever the fuck we want to talk about.
Yeah.
As to my week.
Yeah.
I already mentioned going to work thing. Yeah. I am knee-deep in Skyrim, going crazy for them. About 45 hours in, still barely scratched the surface in a lot of ways.
It's immense.
There's half the towns I still haven't visited, half the major settlements. But level 22, I believe.
Wow.
That's
pretty good.
Killed a fuck ton of dragons, but only killed like two that were part of the plot.
Oh, the rest of them are just showing up.
Yeah, they're just around in some weird places sometimes. I hate that now. I'm keyed into that sound now, so I'm doing stuff and I'm like, oh, I do not have time for this. I've decided that Lydia, my first house carl,
sure,
which I still think sounds like some terrible thing you'd find on Urban Dictionary, but is actually an old Nordic word. I still like her. I've discovered how much she sucks.
As a companion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I got a new one, and that new one has no stuff. I haven't given him anything to wear yet or anything. Mm-hmm. He killed that dragon by himself. I was a little bit busy, and I heard there was a dragon, and so I was dealing with the other stuff, and I finished, and I run to go to the dragon, and there's just a dragon corpse full of ice spikes, because my new guy can do ice spikes.
Oh.
He actually has magic. So, yeah. So now I'm like, maybe I'll make Lydia the steward of one of my houses. But
well, you know, she'll stay in that house if you're not taking her.
Yeah, I know, but I feel bad. I feel like she should do something productive. But, she's not. And she died like three times. Yeah, this guy never died and killed a dragon. So, I like him. Anyway, we did game this week.
Oh, yeah.
We gamed for real this week. We made some good progress. I messed with their heads really bad. They had weird alien stuff that they didn't know how to deal with, tubes coming out and sticking to people. And
oh, no.
Crazy crap. And then the cavern they were in underground just blowing out, and so the atmosphere went out, and somebody had a big hole in their suit, and they had to deal with that. And lots of crazy crap going on.
Jeez.
Yes. But all that was resolved, and so now we're just going to have a nice normal next week. Hopefully we'll play this. We might play Southeast Missouri Voluntary SWAT Team because one of our players may not be there, but it's not the one who usually can't make it. So if we do play Southeast Missouri Voluntary SWAT Team, a player who has never been able to play that will finally get to play that. And he's been aching for it because everybody, they always talk about it later. Oh, okay. And he's like, I want to see what this is like. I saw one movie.
Oh, okay, what'd you see?
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which I had been meaning to see forever and had forgotten about it. And then the producer just had us watch it for a date night one night because it was on, not Netflix, on Amazon. In my mind, it's way old. In my mind, it was like the 90s, but in fact, it's 2005.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No. I mean, 9 years, that's
yeah, but in my mind, it was way... my mind, it was actually at the height of Robert Downey Jr.'s drug stuff, where pretty much nobody... But it's not. It's past all that.
Yeah.
It's pretty close to Iron Man, actually. And it's got him, it's got Val Kilmer, looking way younger than he looks these days. The last few years have been rough on him. It's got Corbin Burnson, who I haven't seen in ages. I forget the female lead, but that becomes a thing. Are you going to ask me what I thought of it?
Sometimes you do this. Sometimes you just say, and other times you wait for me to ask you. Okay, go ahead, tell me.
I like to be wooed. All right. In general, I liked it. I'm kind of lukewarm on it. That being said, I think I would recommend it, including, I think, to you. I think you would enjoy it.
Oh, okay.
It is intended to be a twist. Basically, it's a pretty strong satire, not parody, but satire of old dime store detective novel stuff.
Okay.
And it is really heavy. Our POV character is Robert Downey Jr.'s character.
Okay.
And it is incredibly heavy on acknowledging that it's a movie and that he's narrating. Mm. To the degree, they break the fourth wall so much that there are times where he stops and complains about the scene that they just had.
Okay.
And apologizes. But he's still claiming it's a true story. Mm. But he's narrating that way. And they talk, even the talk about the end, about the credits rolling, like they very much acknowledging it's a movie and that he's narrating it.
Mm-hmm.
It had the script is great. I like the script a lot.
Oh, okay.
It's very clever. It's very funny. Largely, this is a funny movie. Mm. I mean, there's lots of murder and shit, but largely, it's a funny movie. Robert Downey Jr., as you would expect with this combination of elements, does great. Val Kilmer does great, and it's kind of an intriguing role they put him in. They have some really good dialogue. Some of the best stuff is their dialogue. Mm-hmm. The female lead, who I recognize on sight, but I can't recall her name, I don't think she was a good choice.
Oh.
And the pacing is weird, but they're basically that casting choice of the female lead and the direction are what I would blame for most of it.
Mm.
And I think the script is a solid piece of work. That being said, it was still quite intelligible and entertaining, and I liked it. Just every once in a while, it was a little clunky in places. It kind of got full of itself. It got a little hipstery in places. Because it's very cute and funny.
Hipstery.
You know, it's along the... It has humor along the lines of, I'd say, like Pulp Fiction.
Mm.
It's very sort of out-of-nowhere stuff, just little quips and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, it just sort of gets a little smug about it.
Okay.
And I don't feel that's the script's fault. I feel like you could really fix that with good direction.
Gotcha.
But so I would recommend it. And honestly... At this point, I'm going to see Robert Downey Jr. in anything I get my hands on.
Okay.
Because I feel like he's really good.
Well, he's good, sure.
Now, lately, he's been doing shit that I don't care about. Mm. I didn't see the second Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, no, neither
did I. It's a waste of his talent. But when you put him in something that he can really sink his teeth into, he was the only good thing about Scanner Darkly. Mm. That movie sucked, but I loved him in it. Well, okay, also the rotoscoping was a very cool effect. But that was it. So, yes, I'm going through some of his stuff. Anyway, I think that's all I've got.
We saw Galaxy Quest, I told you.
Oh, she saw it?
Yeah,
what did she think?
She loved it.
That movie's awesome. If
it is
any
awesome.
Of you out there in Hatling Land have not seen Galaxy Quest, goddamn, go see Galaxy Quest.
And you know what? We didn't talk about, right after it happened, I didn't send you an email about it or anything, but that Harold Ramis passed away.
Yes, that hurt.
Yeah.
But it was weird.
It was surprising is what it
was. I feel like I like him as a director. I love him as an actor.
Well, and as a writer, too.
I mean, not so sure I did. That was the thing. I went to Wikipedia. He made a lot of stuff that I hate.
Well, no, that's true. But, I mean, he made some stuff I'm sure you liked.
He made some
liked.
Great stuff, and he directed a lot of stuff I really like.
Yeah.
And I loved him in anything he was in.
Yeah.
And mostly, yeah, it was as with, like, with James Gandolfini not long ago, just too soon. Just feels like that guy had a lot more to do.
Well, I mean, when Philip Seymour Hoffman passed away,
yes.
That was a real shock. But
that's heartbreaking, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. But and when Harold Ramis passed away, it almost felt the same, even though he's 69 years old when he passed.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's still too soon, as you said, but if it's like, wow, that just doesn't seem...
Yeah.
That doesn't seem right.
Yeah. No,
well, and he was sick. I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah, know. Yeah. At least there was something that we know with this. I mean, it wasn't a sudden OD or something.
No, like he was ill, and that, which is sad, very tragic. But
well, and has been fighting it for a long time.
That's
apparently.
Right. That's right.
Got paralyzed and then relearned to walk and then got paralyzed again.
Yeah, just an amazing story, really. I had no idea, but yeah, I was sad to hear that happen, but.
But time to laugh again. Seriously, go see Galaxy Quest. If you haven't seen it, see it.
It's really good.
If you liked any sci-fi TV show, if you ever watched any episode of Star Trek, especially the original series, if you have ever been to a science fiction convention, if any of these things are true for you, and I can't imagine that at least one of them isn't if you're listening to this, this movie is awesome.
Actually,
and
also,
it also has a really baby Justin Long doing a great job in a really stupid little role.
No, right. But also, if you haven't done any of those things and don't like them, but you think the people who do them are idiots and geeks and whatever,
yeah,
you might still like
you
it.
Make fun of it.
Yeah,
as well.
You might still.
You won't
like
empathize,
it, no.
But because that's what I do. Like everything in that movie, I'm like, I feel like so many of these people. It's amazing, and those ones that I don't feel like, I'm like. That's always how I assumed it really was. And they ask so many questions that I've been asking for years.
Well, it's just really clever, I think.
Why is this even here? Doesn't make sense. This script was poorly written.
Very clever.
It is. Well, and it gives you a very clever premise that is just gold.
Yeah.
Once you establish the premise, you can run with it.
Yeah. It practically writes itself.
It gives you control to just make fun of things and have it actually be a story. No, it's awesome. And phenomenal performances by everyone, including Tim Allen, who I don't give a damn about.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Well, it's perfect. He's playing William Shatner, let's be honest.
Basically.
And he plays him really well.
And Tony Shalhoub's character
Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Sigourney Weaver, way funnier than I've seen her in years. I know she's capable. She's a great actress.
But
it's been a long time to see her do that. Alan Rickman,
great.
Forget about it.
Yeah, it was
Holy
great.
Shit. Oh my God. No, see the movie. Great. And in fact, if you've seen the movie already, go back and watch it again now.
It's totally rewatchable.
It is. I've
you
seen
can
it like
watch
six
it
times.
Over and over again.
That movie, you get you get tread out of that movie.
Yeah. It's really good.
All right. So, Hat. I heard we had one of those.
A hat?
A hat.
I heard that too.
By Grabthar's Hammer. Go see that movie.
Whoa, this
Sons
is...
Sons of Warvan.
This is from the producer.
Ooh.
Man, it's...
You'd think as the producer she'd just tell us what to talk about, but... She plays fair.
Okay. Magical Hatlings.
That's not us, that's you guys, so apparently you're supposed to answer this.
As a lucid... relatively intelligent person, should I believe the findings of the Warren Commission? Oh, man.
Oh.
We really don't have time to answer this question.
No, this is interesting. I have run into this before. Okay, because here's the thing, and I want to lay it out for people out there. I mean, I'm not going to deign that you guys don't know what the Warren Commission is. But I want to get at what I'm pretty sure is her point here.
Okay.
Because I share it, and I'm fascinated by this concept.
Okay.
Let's assume for a moment we're all relatively straightforward, intelligent American.
Sure.
Well, mostly.
Okay.
Some cases, Europeans. although it'd be interesting, Craig, you may have a very different take, and Steve, if you still listen, this may be, because this is a very American cultural thing, so that could be a very interesting perspective.
Well, does that mean we should explain what the Warren Commission thing is?
No. Well, I'm going to get there.
Okay.
I'm going to get there.
Okay.
In general, as a people, I would say, as your average intelligent citizens, two things are true. One, we generally know that, especially when it comes to the government, there's things going on that we don't know about.
Right.
There's underhanded. We all sort of assume that.
Well, okay.
That there's shit going on that we don't know about.
It's a little bit more than an assumption.
Yeah, well, there's some pretty strong evidence.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Without even going into specifics,
okay.
We're just like, yeah, there's stuff going on.
Okay, right.
Know. But two, most things out there that would be considered conspiracy theories, like we didn't land on the moon, you know, or, you know, I don't know, anything about the Freemasons these days, we all pretty much think is not true.
Right. Also with some evidence to support that idea.
Where it gets weird, and where I don't know what... And here's the thing. I say we all feel that way. That's what I mean. I'm not saying that that's actually true that we feel that way, but enough people do that, socially speaking, it is assumed that all of us average, relatively intelligent Americans believe those two things.
Yeah, I would say so.
Is there, because I don't know that there is, a socially assumed... stance that we are expected to have about JFK's assassination? Are we, as intelligent normal Americans, supposed to say, yeah, dude, it was, oh God, I'm on drugs, I lose names all the time. Lee Harvey Oswald. It was Lee Harvey Oswald by himself, up in the thing, that's it. And what they found in the Warren Commission, it's fine. Or are we supposed to be like, Zapruder, Grassy Knoll, second show, I don't know, there's stuff going on. I mean, to the degree that they keep making damn movies about it.
Okay, well, let me just say this. This is one of those things I think that if you did a poll, you'd find exactly what you're saying is true. That generally people think, yeah, there's some shady things going on in the government that we don't know what's going on. But also, generally, you'd find out, yeah, there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there that are nuts.
Obama probably was born in this country.
What I mean is... they would generally say, yeah, there's these conspiracy theories out there that are nuts. But if you ask about a specific conspiracy theory, you're going to get a lot of variation. For example, the same person that would say, yeah, there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there that are nuts, probably believes a conspiracy theory of some kind and doesn't think that counts as the nutball ones.
Do you think?
See what I'm saying?
But isn't there sort of a range? I mean, like, you're probably not going to find an intelligent person who's like, yeah, there's some crazy conspiracy theories, but we really didn't land on the moon. That one kind of puts you in an outlying position, don't you think?
Well, I suppose that's right.
To be honest, Obama born in a different country, that puts you in kind of an outlying position, doesn't it?
Well,
I know I'm hitting personal territory for you here.
Personal for me? No, you're not.
Because you got relatives.
That's right. I do know people, and some people who I'm related to, who question where he was born. And for me personally, yes, that seems to put them in the same camp. But you know, I think that the scientific one is such a scientific question, and the other is, while being a verifiable empirical question, also is so rife with political nonsense that the landing on the moon thing isn't quite. I don't really know what the motivation is for people not to believe that.
Well, okay. Let me see if I can adjust the question and make it more answerable this way. If we take the average conspiracy theories out there, as a rule, socially speaking, there's some that feel further out there than others.
I guess.
Moon landing, pretty far out there.
I suppose.
So-and-so governmental institution is secretly backing such-and-such political institution. Not so shocking, you know. I don't even have one, but those come up all the time, you know. Or let's do Acorn is a bullshit institution that's trying to help people become prostitutes, you know. Still think that is wrong, but it's way more in the it could be believable. And if somebody believes that, you don't necessarily think they're a lunatic wearing a tinfoil hat. Whereas if they don't believe we land on the moon, lunatic with a tinfoil hat.
Well, the thing is,
where does the JFK assassination fall in?
I don't know, because what I was getting at earlier is that conspiracy theories and whether or not a person believes in them is based on some fairly idiosyncratic things. I mean, you can look at the Obama birth certificate thing. Since that is so politically loaded, it's going to appeal to a more recognizable demographic. But that's not really how most conspiracy theories work. Most conspiracy theories are very personal, and people subscribe to them for very, very personal reasons. And as a matter of fact, if you go to a place where all of the people who think that there was a conspiracy for the JFK assassination, for example, are gathered, hardly any of them will agree what the conspiracy is. UFOs stuff is the exact same way. So conspiracy theories are
So you're saying that there's generally very really no consensus, and everybody just has their pet one.
Pretty much. And I'm also, I mean,
I still feel like we can quantify this stuff. I still feel, because again, I think there are some conspiracy theories that were like, I don't think a lot of people believe that.
No.
Then there are some that were like, that's muddy waters
Here's what I can say. And, you know, Scott and I talked about this on Screenshots around the 50th anniversary of the assassination, is that I think what you can say about the JFK assassination in particular is that of all the conspiracy events, that particular one, more than any, is one that you're going to find just about everybody has an opinion on. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
The moon landing thing, it's not really so much an opinion when someone says, no, that was real. I mean, you know what I'm saying? That's what they're part of their taking for granted reality. Some people don't have an opinion about UFOs or anything else.
Yeah.
But the JFK assassination is something you can engage just about everybody in a conversation with about it, and they'll tell you, well, no, I thought this is what I think happened.
Well, but that's the weird thing, because I'm the exact opposite with that. I have some beliefs on some of the other stuff, and on that one, I'm like, I don't really know. And I don't really know how I could know at this point, or really what impact it has on me at this point.
Well, what concerns people...
Because that was the thing. When I discussed this with people earlier, not that I see the questions before, but I am married to this woman, so it's come up. Right. I didn't know... I'm still not sure what I believe about it.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, I haven't put a lot of brain power in it, because I'm doesn't touch my life, really. Like, doesn't.
Well, but most conspiracy theories don't.
Yeah.
I mean, UFOs and I don't know, moon some of these landing. Feel, I mean,
it would be a big deal to me if I found out we didn't go to the moon.
Really?
If I found out now, they're right. Yeah, no, dude, that would fuck with me. But if I found out tomorrow that this was the CIA really did shoot him,
yeah,
be like, wow, that is interesting. So what's for lunch?
Well, you know, as far as the actual question goes, I'm kind of with you. I don't know. The thing about the...
Do you think some of it is the time period and the technology involved is why this one is such a thing? Because it's just at the time where we're filming, we're showing some stuff on TV, but that's all still new enough. Like, nowadays, if shit like this went down, like, the TV would have it, and we could, you know, slow it down and zoom in and all sorts of crap. And then, of course, going back further from that, you basically would just have the words of whoever was there and a radio announcer or whatever. This is sort of that in-between stage where people can see it, but not real well.
Well, and actually, that part of the route of his motorcade or whatever wasn't televised. The films that people were taking, and I think that makes it significant, is the films we do have were taken by just regular people who had cameras there.
Who weren't that good at it either.
Well, no, but see, that's...
I've seen part of the Zapruder film.
It's really the first time we have anything that today we can compare to having your cell phone and taking a video of something.
If you'd gone back 10 years previous, there would just be...
Yeah.
Word amount.
That's exactly. Spoken. That's right. That's right. So.
Well, which is why it always reminds me of the Archduke of Ferdinand's assassination, which is very similar in certain ways, but hysterically messed up, and just a giant joke. But it's all hearsay, so I don't know. Like, it makes a great story.
Right.
But I have no idea.
But most of the things. When people are asking a question like this to say, would it be crazy, you know, in some way to believe the Warren Commission report? Usually they're talking about the magic bullet and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
But really the Warren Commission report is just one version of the, in fact, that's not the only government version of the story. So the fact of the matter is, if you just want to go based on the evidence that has been presented, right, without doing your own investigation, there's really no way. Because the government even has released contradictory reports about it. So if the government can't seem to...
all just a hot mess at this point.
Yeah, exactly. But,
and again, doesn't have a lot of impact on us, though.
Well, no, except that some people do think that it's something that, you know, if it comes from a deep government conspiracy, they believe that there's some... The fact that...
Since it sets precedent for evil shit going
not
down.
Not just that, but if there was a big government conspiracy that caused this, and we still don't know that, that suggests that whatever nefarious forces were working are still working now because they're...
They could do it then. They learned from those mistakes.
Yeah, they're keeping it secret. You know, if those forces weren't still present, then we would be able to uncover it.
Well, and this became an interesting thing. When sci-fi shows got into government conspiracy stuff, largely when The X-Files started, this concept came into a lot of them that I find fascinating, in the idea that the secret organizations and the government are the ones heading the groups of conspiracy theorists. Because they put out forth these ideas in just such ways that those people look crazy.
Yeah, right.
And so in the same thing here is... The government releases contradictory thing, and they muddy the waters so much that no one will ever be able to find out the truth. And it's possible this particular report here was the actual truth, but it's in amongst these others. Nobody's ever going to know for sure. I've always thought that was an intriguing idea narratively. Again, as an actual citizen in the world here on Earth with these people, don't know, don't really care a lot.
I want to talk about my favorite idea, though, about this assassination.
Okay.
The one I think is the most interesting.
All right.
Is it
the Quantum Leap one? Because that's my favorite
one.
No. Is the Quantum Leap one.
This is totally fascinating to me, though. I'll summarize the theory just by saying it was a mob hit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It was a mob hit, and some disgruntled CIA people were involved. Not the CIA proper.
No,
government group proper.
Some pissed off guys.
Just some angry CIA people helped, because it is known and documented that the CIA worked with the mob, and that they worked closely together in lots of things. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility that they helped, you know, a few CIA people helped the mob out with this thing. But here's what's interesting. It's also known that Bobby and Jack were planning the assassination of Fidel Castro.
Okay.
And for the people who reviewed the documents that were created as they planned this, and it was very secret, only a few people knew about it, that the assassination of JFK and the events surrounding it and it all being pegged on Lee Harvey Oswald looked eerily similar to what they planned to do in Cuba. To assassinate Castro, to pin it on some patsy, I mean, the whole thing.
So JFK planned his own assassination.
In a way. So this is what they're saying happened. The mob wanted to get rid of Kennedy because, you know, they helped him get elected and then he didn't do his part, so they wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, you know, it does seem like a mob hit, doesn't it? I mean, when people say, oh, it was the CIA or the military, it doesn't seem like the way they'd do it.
No.
You know.
Well, because the thing is, the publicness of it,
yeah,
it feels more like a statement.
Yeah, than exactly.
An efficient,
that's right.
Process.
So what seems to have happened is, or what people think might have happened is, the mob wanted to get rid of him, and this does sound like the way the mob would do it in a general way, but they got from CIA insiders that, well, you know what, we could turn their own plan, their own assassination plan, against them. Now, this is the beauty of that plan, is not only is it poetic, and hey, again, mob hit, right? Mm. They like poetry, or so it's said, but how's Bobby going to respond? Okay, he's in a position to decide how this whole thing gets investigated. So his brother gets assassinated, and he knows that if they investigate it, they're going to find out about the plans that he and his brother had to assassinate Castro. So not only does his brother have to watch Bobby have to watch his brother get gunned down, but he can't even see that there's justice done because he has to cover everything up. He personally has to do it, which is another thing that sounds mob-like, right? Like, yeah, you will watch your brother die, and then you, Bobby, will have to cover it up.
I'm not watching it, but isn't this basically season two of Game of Thrones?
I don't know, but can you see how insidious and clever that is? So Bobby himself covered it up because he couldn't get justice for his brother without exposing his brother's plans to assassinate Castro. So he had to choose between justice for his brother and covering it up, and so Bobby himself covered it up.
Okay, I have a question for you.
I think that's a great story. That's the best story I've ever heard in relation to it.
I have a question for you in relation to this. And I want to warn you and everybody else. This is going to sound like a deep, penetrating, thought-provoking question that sort of blows the lid off of this whole thing. It's not. It's a very straightforward question of which I just have never taken the trouble to find out the answer.
Okay.
What happened to Jack Ruby? He kills Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, yeah, right.
They get him.
Yeah.
Right there.
Mm-hmm.
Did he just hang out in prison for decades?
No.
Why were people not constantly like...
Oh, he died eventually.
But how long?
Oh, it wasn't very long. I don't remember how long, but...
Because I feel like there we should have, like, tons of interviews from him and a memoir and shit.
No. He didn't last very long.
Because, okay. So was that part of the plan?
I don't know. I mean, the way this...
I'm like, that seems like your best vector
yeah,
for investigating this right there.
The way this story goes that I'm telling is... Well, first of all, the whole magic bullet thing, that was... there are some people who've researched it and found out that most of the speculations about more than one shot or a magic bullet or whatever are based on an assumption of how fast the motorcade was going that was too fast. And if you slow it down... there's actually no problem with a shooter from the book depository getting off those shots. That's not to say Oswald did it.
Yeah.
But it's to say that whoever did do it, you know, wasn't going to have very many problems doing it. And Oswald, whether he did it or not, is kind of irrelevant because he was the guy who was set up for it. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't really matter if he did it or not. And Ruby had to kill him because, you know, he couldn't go to trial. Because think about this for a second. Nobody's been charged with that crime. And since Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't put on trial for it, and since in our country you're innocent until proven guilty, he's not even technically guilty for it.
Technically, JFK died of natural causes.
Technically, nobody did it. I mean, nobody has been pointed at to have done it.
Ooh, that's a magic bullet.
Oswald, if we presume Oswald was innocent until proven guilty, and he wasn't proven guilty, then we can't say he did it. We don't know who did it. or it's never been proven in a court of law who did it. Now, the Warren Commission and other reports from the government are supposed to do that for us, but since those reports are also contradictory, we still don't know. But so yeah, but Ruby had to kill him, and then Ruby, you know, he was a loose end too for a while, and so he survived in prison for a little while. I don't know how long.
I gotta look that one up. I'm very curious.
But then he died.
All right, let's get another question in.
Okay. I'm sorry we can't answer your question adequately, producer.
Well, I think we took a stab at it. All right, this is from Bloodsparrow.
Oh, wow, it's been a while.
And this references earlier stuff we've talked about.
Oh, okay.
Which is a dangerous thing to do when you write into the hat.
Yeah.
But
sometimes.
I don't think so this time. So she says, that conversation you had about Coke Zero and Diet Coke last year blew my mind. What other interesting soda facts do you know?
Oh, wow.
Should we recap a little bit for people who didn't know?
Well, you can recap for me because I don't remember.
So, 85, I think, New Coke comes out.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola is New Coke. Diet Coke doesn't exist at this point.
That's right.
There is a diet drink put out by them. It's called Tab. Still exists to this day. Harder to find, but it does exist. Tab was the zero-calorie thing. By the time, there's just Coke, and then there's New Coke. And when New Coke comes out, Diet Coke comes out.
Right, based on the New Coke formula.
Well, again, spoilers.
Oh, okay.
So, as we all know, everyone hates New Coke.
Yeah.
So they slowly phase it out in the process of first having Coke Classic,
yes,
regular, and then eventually New Coke, just fuck you. What people don't know is the Diet Coke, based off of the same formula as New Coke, not off of the original Coke.
Yeah.
But everybody loves it, or at least the people who drink Diet, and so it sticks around, and to this day it exists, but it is in fact essentially Diet New Coke.
Yeah.
So then Coke Zero comes around, and what Coke Zero in fact is, and I was very confused for a while. For a while I thought it was like, oh, it's done with Splenda instead of aspartame.
Yeah, yeah,
no,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
No. Coke Zero is Diet Coke Classic.
Right.
Which means that, like they say, it actually does taste significantly closer to Coke Classic than Diet Coke does. But it also means it tastes remarkably similar to Tab.
Wow.
That being said, I really like it. I
didn't know Tab tasted like that. I've never really drank diet sodas.
Yeah, when I was younger, we would drink it. Oh, it's all I drank when I was a kid, and Tab came up a few times. Other soda facts. I've got a couple.
Do you?
I've talked before about Dr. Enough from Tennessee.
Yeah.
I did look it up to make sure I wasn't crazy. It is a real thing. Did not like it. The history of... Oh, sorry. Ezzy's just putting her butt on the mic, if anybody's know that. If that sounded like kitty butt, that's why. Do you know the history of Fanta?
No.
Fanta is very interesting. Fanta was invented in Germany during World War II. Because prior to World War II, Germany, like I'm guessing a lot of other places, drank Coca-Cola. And they had factories in there to make the Coca-Cola.
Hmm.
And then World War II happens. Coca-Cola is not hanging out there anymore.
Hmm.
So they couldn't make it. I'm guessing they couldn't, because, you know, it's a secret recipe and all that. So I'm guessing they couldn't get the syrup or whatever. So they can't do it. But, A, Germans got to drink soda. B, we got to do something with all of this. You know, we got this carbonated water sitting around and shit. So,
okay,
they come up with their own thing.
Yeah.
And sort of, I mean, it's a wartime thing, so I think they had to use, like, something, because orange juice is the start of it.
Okay.
And so Fanta comes out, and it's essentially orange Fanta, but it's not anything like it is today, back then. But I think also it might have been the first orange soda.
Oh, okay.
But it comes out, and that gets them through the war. And after the war, I think they made a few flavors. Because basically they would run out of something, and so they would use something else. So it was basically a what have we got in the shop today soda. You're in Germany. It's World War II. Deal with it, you know. And then that ends, and Coke comes back in, and they find out about this. And they find at least the orange flavor. This is awesome. And so they buy it. And Fanta, all over the goddamn world, over the history of the drink, there have been at least 50 flavors. A lot of them very country specific. A lot of them flavors we would not understand here. I think there was a tamarind one at one point. And a lot of them discontinued now. But even within that, like orange Fanta here, a lot of countries have orange Fanta that does not taste like here. Because of a powerful thing.
What's that?
I may have talked about this before. I've talked about the scary thing that is in Mountain Dew. Brominated vegetable oil.
Yes.
That I was under the impression, and I still am kind of, is an emulsifier for when you've got citrus in there. So it doesn't, like, clump up or whatever. But apparently it also gives that sort of candy-like sweet.
Okay.
That you get, and especially in orange soda in America, you get orange, if you've ever had, what is it? There's one throughout Europe, there's an orange drink that I used to get a lot. I don't remember what it is, but a lot of times when you get orange soda in other countries, it tastes like a carbonated sort of orange juicy thing. Here, definitely it does not. It tastes like orange candy, basically. Yeah, it does,
liquid candy.
That's apparently because of the brominated vegetable oil, and that's something that we now expect here, and so they don't necessarily do it in other countries, but they do it here. But same thing, orange Fanta, same thing, does it here. Yeah, so I thought that was very interesting.
So it's the soft drink of the Nazis.
Basically, kind of like Volkswagen was the car of the Nazis. Other fun fact, do you remember Guarana?
No.
Guarana was... I learned about Guarana when I was in junior high. Because I had a couple of friends who came back from... They had spent a year as exchange students in Brazil. And they came back from... I must have been high school, not junior high. And what they told me is, first of all, whatever you might have heard, the official drink of, or the national drink of Brazil is beer. Whatever else you've heard, that's what they all drink all the time. But
why? What else would you have heard?
I don't know. Some people say there's like this banana liqueur that is, or stupid people say it's pina coladas, or I don't know. But anyway, they're like, it's beer. They said, but the national non-alcoholic drink of Brazil is Guarana. And they really liked this stuff, and they talked about it. Well, a few years later, a fad started in the U.S. of Guarana, and they came up with a few of them. There was one company that I think just called it Guarana. The one that lasted the longest at the end was called Yosta with a J, that was a Guarana soda. Prior to that, Samba soft drink came out for a while. I don't know if you recall this.
I don't know.
It was three of those. It was very much Brazilian. All the commercial things, it's from Brazil. But it was Guarana as its base, and then you had like Guarana, and the one it was like Guarana and orange or something, you know, things like that. And Guarana is a berry down there. It's really tasty. I really enjoy the flavor. I don't know what it is. So I drank tons of the shit when it was around. I miss it now that it's gone. But the other thing that they sort of didn't say at the time, but now it'll show up occasionally in energy drinks, it is a huge source of caffeine built into it.
Really?
Yes, it is intensely caffeinated. So Guarana will get you going real fast. But yeah, that was a big, and there was a fad for a while where those were around.
Boy, I don't remember any of that. I've never been a big soft drink person. I mean, root beer, as you know.
Yeah.
I like to drink root beer, and I've got...
I feel like you should have some good root beer facts.
Not anything unique. I mean, you know. I mean, a root beer, well, for one thing, originally root beer just meant any beverage that was made from herbs and roots and whatnot.
It didn't
have a particular flavor. It took some time for people to associate root beer specifically to that kind of licorice, kind of sassafras kind of flavor that people are used to.
Do you mean sarsaparilla?
No.
Sassafras?
Sarsaparilla is also something that it is usually used in root beers, but it's probably the sassafras is closer to what people associate with the root beer flavor. But something about sassafras, it's at some point research showed that it was kind of bad for you or something.
Ooh.
So a lot of American root beers, I don't remember if it was against the law or not against the law, if it was too highly regulated or something, but they replaced it with an artificial flavor. But you can still get sarsaparilla in some root beers.
I've also heard whorehound as root beer related.
Yeah, and wintergreen is often in there.
Interesting.
But yeah, for a long time, root beer didn't have a specific, like, for example, Dr. Pepper might have been considered a root beer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, anything that wasn't a cola or a fountain drink, like with a fruity flavor or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was made with, like, it was essentially a carbonated tea, if you will. Uh-huh. That would have been a root beer. But now, of course, everyone associates it with a very specific kind of flavor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And and you can get, so like birch beer, for example, a lot of people are familiar with that.
Yeah.
Even though something that's a real authentic birch beer isn't going to have sassafras or sarsaparilla or any of the typical root beer flavors in it, but it does still have that sort of root beer kind of taste.
Oh, okay.
It's slightly different. Have you ever had birch beer?
I think so.
Yeah, it's slightly different. But that's that would be considered a root beer.
Yeah.
But now people sort of divide them out. So a birch beer is a specific thing made from birch, obviously. A sarsaparilla is a specific thing where it's mostly a sarsaparilla flavor with not a lot else.
And ginger beer.
And ginger ale would also be a root beer, technically.
Yeah.
And then you've got the root beer that everyone's familiar with, which is going to be, like I said, it's going to have a licorice, wintergreen, sassafras kind of flavor to it. And that, you know, that's what people generally call, you know, root beer. And A&W root beer used to be made fresh in the restaurants. It used to be made fresh, even for a long time after the canned stuff came out.
Oh.
I don't think it's that way anymore, though. I think if you go to a...
No, they still have the little things made to look like it is.
Yeah.
Because, like, all the other fountain drinks are in a little line, and then there's the little thing. But, yeah, I think that's
But a lot of the restaurants used to make it from scratch. And you could tell the difference after the canned stuff came out.
Yeah, yeah.
Really tell the difference.
And there is still some difference, because when you get it at the store, you can...
Yeah.
Tell the difference.
Well, and
get it at the restaurant.
I tried lots of root beers, and A&W was always still my favorite. But now I've discovered
A&W is what I grew up with.
Now I've discovered that if I get something that's a straight up sarsaparilla, I really like it, because that's the part of the A&W root beer flavor that I like the most is that sarsaparilla flavor. So when I get something that's just sarsaparilla, I kind of miss the wintergreen and kind of the anise tones you get in A&W, but that. The sarsaparilla part is so good that I enjoy a good sarsaparilla.
I have noticed that different root beers in my life that I get from, like, store or whatever have very distinct flavors.
Sure.
Such that I wouldn't even have called them the same kind of flavor in some cases. So that's probably what you're talking about.
Yeah.
We are over time, and more importantly than that, I have to pee like a racehorse.
That's what you said last time. We had to.
Well,
that's exactly what you said.
Because I guess that's when I drink my afternoon beverage, so... Apparently, that's going to be the new definition of how, and we talk about things until we're bored, and we do that until Tony has to pee.
Like a racehorse.
Like a racehorse.
That's the point.
Anyway, I am going to be back next week, and William might be with me, probably.
Recording in the evening next week, do you?
Yeah, we're back to normal, because I'm back to full-time work.
That's right.
All
right,
so in the meantime, we love you. Go out and do good.
If make good choices.
If you know where I live, send me money. and we'll see you next week. I really gotta pee.
Okay.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.